This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
I mean, what's Penn Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team. I would be very careful about slinging stuff. Am I going to get sued?
We got legal on this?
I like football. I like football season. All the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Sam Monson. We're recapping all things preseason week two. Sam, you ready to go?
Or the best preseason week, as I like to call it.
This is the best one?
No.
Oh, okay.
It is fun, though, when
you get... week three out of four.
Well, it's funny when you get... This is the game... This, I think, is the game generally that is treated with the most disdain and contempt by the NFL teams, you know? Like, there was a... I retweeted a sort of pre-game list of the, I can't remember how, 25 49ers that weren't going to be playing in this game, something like that. Like, there are teams out there who are like, nobody's playing in this game. Nobody.
I used to like the old flow of you got four preseason games, you got like a series for the starters in week one, you amp it up, you know, ramp it up a little bit in week two. Week three is the dress rehearsal. They used to call it the dress rehearsal week.
Yeah.
Play through the half.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe into the second half. Like, learn what it feels like to come out of halftime. Starters, then you sit out week four, you know. Yeah. Maybe see a series again, right? You just, now it's just like stay healthy, which is fine.
But you also do get the, I mean, I'm waiting for this to happen. Baltimore won, right?
Of course.
So yeah, so they're up to 22 straight, or was that 21?
I don't know. I'm losing track, but I know it's better than Miami.
Yeah.
And so they need to write a book about this.
I'm waiting for some team to just get sick of that and go, we are playing the starters all game just to stop this win streak.
Gonna slow down the Ravens.
Because everybody's getting fed up of Baltimore just winning every game in the preseason.
Ravens preseason train here.
But it does mean that you get these games sometimes in week two where one team is playing none of the starters and, you know, some select backups aren't playing either. And the other team is actually running the starters for, like, the majority of the first quarter. Yeah. And it's literally first string against second string for half the game.
Yeah, Josh Allen and the Bills going up against Broncos backups this
week. Yeah, exactly. And you're like, yeah, I mean, okay. I think this, it was already a challenge to get anything of substance out of preseason performances. You're muddying the waters even further when you're saying, now you're going up literally against backups.
All right, well, we will have some reactions and overreactions to this weekend's action. But first, the charity drive.
Yeah, we are up to $1,350. We had another $5 come in since the last time I thought that was the number. My pinned tweet at PFF_Sam or the description of the podcast. We are raising money for a group called Needs Inc. They help provide the money for people to afford service dogs who desperately need them, because apparently service dogs are insanely expensive. $17,000 at a minimum to buy the dog and $40,000 to train the dog. So you are out a staggering sum of cash if you need a service dog, and most people don't have that kind of money. So Needs Inc. steps into the breach and helps pay for those costs. When we raise our goal, when we hit our goal, we're going to find out if I can pitch a baseball 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Which I will.
Yeah. I'm not even gonna debate you here. I'm mm-hmm. just gonna let you go. I'm looking forward to seeing it, though. We appreciate everybody that's already donated, those who are considering it. I should have invited you. I didn't know what the protocol was, but I did make my major league debut.
I saw
on Friday
bits and pieces.
You saw bits and pieces.
Yeah.
I was
it was one of those like home run derby style things where there's somebody like lobbing you a ball from behind a fence thing.
No, he was in front. He was pitching. It was former Reds pitcher, Tom Browning.
Oh, maybe I just saw the batting. Was that batting practice?
They put the batting cage up there so you know you don't want foul balls going into the stands and everything.
Oh, okay.
It was a controlled environment, but we played a 9-inning game. Me and a whole bunch of other PNC clients. Shout out to PNC Bank.
Were you obviously the best player, or did you blend in with the PNC banking crowd?
There was a couple youngins who probably play in like a local softball league who are hitting the ball pretty well.
Oh dear.
But I was clearly the best.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's okay.
I didn't get any hits though, because I just kept trying to jack bombs. I was just trying to hit home runs. And it was like slow pitch softball. Everybody would just back up and catch it.
Huh. You weren't able to, you know, ding one out of the park?
No. I've lost some power through that. I came close. I came close-ish. Closer than anyone else.
Okay.
I wasn't getting the backspin I needed. I was kind of topspinning it. Hit some line drives right down the line. I mean, hit the ball hard.
Okay.
Hitting some line drives down the line that were just foul. And then, I don't want to get into it too much. So they, you know, they block off certain areas of the field, right? So when you hit the ball in the air, you're supposed to think too. You're supposed to get wide to get the angle to run around first base to get to second base. So I'm over there just instincts taking over. But there was rope blocking that angle. Like they wanted you going up the baseline. They don't want you tearing up the grass on Great American. This is on Great American Ballpark where the Reds play.
And you would tear up some grass.
So the rope is right there. We'll say rope. And I'm looking at the ball and I'm just, you know, instinctively running wide. And I almost tripped over the rope. I had to like leapfrog it into the area you're not supposed to be as I was trying to take my wide turn. It was a pretty athletic move.
I see.
But we lost. We lost pretty bad. 19-4, my team lost. This guy at third base had no range. I hope he doesn't listen. This guy had no range. I had to play third base starting the fourth inning.
Okay.
Sorry.
I sent you a video of part of it. I think I sent Tyler a video of the whole thing. Did you see Jake Paul trying to do baseball things?
Yeah, atrocious. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
But, so
it's not easy.
But there was both. He pitched and he also hit.
Yeah.
I would go out on a limb and say I can do both better than him.
Again, I think you underrate how difficult
it
is.
This is the thing. I'm coming to the conclusion that there's a giant swathe of people that just can't do these things. Like, you watch him throw a baseball, and you're like, that's pitiful.
Honestly, I don't need to hear you anymore.
Same with
tell me what you can do. I just want to see it. I just want to raise the money, and I want to see you throw the ball.
But this was the same with the hitting thing, right? Like, initially, it was like, oh, I'm going to get murdered by your pitching. You know, we're going to see if I can, like, make contact with one. And then we're doing the batting practice thing, and it's like, you know, hit. It's not that hard. Now, it might be hard if the guy's firing 95 down at you, but
you fouled a few pitches off and hit a pop-up to the pitcher's mound.
Right, which was way more than the, like, random snick of contact we were hoping to get at one point. I'm just saying, this stuff, it's, you know, when you're talking about, like, just reaching a level of, like, can you do this and not embarrass yourself? That's not that hard.
I can't wait to see it. All right, we're going to get into all the preseason action. But if you haven't heard by now, Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy football this summer. We've all been there in fantasy football leagues. It's Sunday morning. You're digging through the news reports on the interwebs, trying to figure out whether to start your stud wide receiver who tweaked his hamstring last week, or have a player on your team who hasn't been getting in the end zone, and then one week he suddenly goes off for 30 points on your bench. With Underdog Fantasy, all the stress of who to start each week is lifted off your shoulders because it's best ball format. Draft your teams before the season starts and get the best score in your lineup each week. Right now you can draft an Underdog's Best Ball Mania 3 tournament and take your shot at $10 million in total prizes. Plus, Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100 when you sign up with the promo code PFF. If you play 10 of those dollars using promo code PFF, you get a free PFF subscription. Underdog drafts close just before NFL kickoff, so what are you waiting for? Head to underdogfantasy.com or the App Store, play $10 with code PFF, and draft your Best Ball Mania team today. All right, Sam, I want to go around the league and recap some of the rookies, right? We got another week in the books. We have Falcons Jets here tonight for Monday Night Football. Or do you want to start with the misinformation that was floating around the internet as well?
Let's start with that then.
All right, let's start with the misinformation. Warren Sharp has gone viral. Warren Sharp on Twitter going viral, calling a backside cutoff block that happens about 10 times a game, calling it dirty, just because, as our friend Mike Renner said, Kayvon Thibodeau, Giants rookie, took it on with his MCL
now
instead
look.
Of, you know, the way you're supposed to.
Young Michael has deleted that tweet because he's got a policy of not dunking on people this year. So let's not draw attention to the fact that he already violated his own policy. To be fair.
Explain what happened really quickly. Explain the play.
I mean, look.
It's an inside zone backside cutoff with the H-back, man. It happens all the time.
Yeah. And the tight end went a little bit too low. Thibodeau attacked the block the wrong way, and it ended up with Thaddeus Moss essentially chucking himself into Thibodeau's knee. yeah. right? Which, you know, doesn't look good, but there's nothing actually wrong with it. Like, it's not an illegal block.
Illegal. It's not uncommon either. The technique was weird, but it's not uncommon.
Well, yes, but it's also not illegal, which is something a lot of people were whinging about. And to be fair, it wasn't just Warren Sharp. Now, Warren Sharp might have been the only one cynically doing it for tweets, but Rich Eisen tweeted, penalty, period, hefty fine, period, suspension, period, nothing less is acceptable, period.
No, that's also wrong, Rich.
Well, exactly. So, and, you know, Rex Chapman replies to that with word.
Doesn't know what he's talking about.
It was not an uncommon reaction to that play because it looked bad. But as you said, it's a perfectly common standard, in fact, play and block that is legal and was simply, it was badly executed, I think, probably by both sides. I think Moss ended up going a little bit lower than he would have wanted to go. Not reacted to, challenged the block, played the block. Took on the block incorrectly. And consequently, his leg was in a place where it shouldn't usually be. When you watch anybody else do that, there's a ton of plays. The other leg is coming backwards to avoid, you know, the guy's shoulder that's being thrown through it. So essentially, you know, Thibodeau unfortunately ends up with an injury that thankfully doesn't appear to be too serious.
Yeah, I hope it's not serious. I want to see Thibodeau play.
But
it is unfortunate.
In part, it was kind of his own fault.
Yeah. I mean, you are taught to take on cut blocks, right? And this is why I distinguish between illegal and common, right? Illegal implies, oh, you know, you don't see this. Like when people are defending it, but, you know, you don't see this all the time, but it's legal. You know, it's within the rules. You stretched it a little bit, but it's within the rule books. This is a common block. This is a backside. The defensive end on the backside of a zone play should be expecting someone to pull backside and take him out.
Also, since I'm, you know, being fair to everybody, Rich, fine journalist that he is, has retweeted some of the reaction of people saying, no, Rich, that's, you know, it's a good... Marshall Newhouse, former offensive lineman. People, this is literally a routine play, a routine block, and a routine defensive technique happening here. Inside the tackle box, the defender is facing him. It's just a bad-looking result.
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't look good, but it happens. It happens every game. Just most of the time, it doesn't result in the defensive end getting injured.
Yeah, so that's it. Anyway, Warren, take down your tweet. Went viral. That's how misinformation spreads, Sam. He puts this thing out there, and then half of the people respond and say, well, of course that's illegal. Yeah, fine them. I mean, everybody just responds emotionally because it looked bad, and they're all wrong. They're all wrong. That's how misinformation spreads. Where's Twitter when that thing comes up? Pull that thing down immediately.
Okay.
Just saying. This is serious stuff. People need to know the rules of football if you're going to watch it. If you're going to have millions of people watching every Sunday, they need to know the rules. They need to know what the backside of inside zone looks like.
Yeah.
With a tight end sifting backside on the defensive end. That's what they need to know. So, yeah, perfectly fine block. Ugly result. I like. Good job, Marshall.
Yeah, well, he wasn't alone. Jeff Schwartz, I think, was in there. Duke Manyweather said it. There was a bunch of people. The people you would expect.
O-line Twitter.
Exactly.
I stand with O-line Twitter.
Exactly.
Just, you know, Warren Sharp bringing us all together here
with his
nonsense. Anyway, so that was it. Let's go to the other. Kenny Pickett, man. Let's just go to the quarterbacks. Let's go through the rookie quarterbacks. Kenny Pickett looked good again.
Yes.
He looked good again.
He had
a negated touchdown, then a real touchdown, zipping it around. I'm not going to overreact, though. I'm not doing it. I did it with Zach Wilson last year.
Yeah. He got the two-minute work. You know, got a chance to sort of do the same things that he was doing in the first game, but in a real situation as opposed to contrived, you know, quick, short passing. Where I would think it's a little bit different from Zach Wilson last year is that I think it looks like Pittsburgh are very deliberately giving Pickett a game plan that is questioning whether he can do the one thing that I had the biggest question about, which is, can you speed up your process and look like you can operate at a pace that is viable at the NFL level? Because if you can't, if you're going to go out there and it's going to be 3.5 seconds of play, so if he was going to look like that, it would look a bit like Malik Willis right now, which is, you know, fine, but like, so Malik Willis goes out there, looks like Malik Willis, and this is one of those situations where it worked out looking like Malik Willis. He made a bunch of plays, but you're like, but that, I mean, you can't play like that. You know what
Plus,
I mean?
Plus, I saw him in person this week at joint practices, too. Just saying, that changes my perception.
But even during the game, you know, Charles Davis was on the call, and he's like, now, Ryan Tannehill is the unquestioned starter here. Let's not get carried away. That's not even on the cards. But, you know, Malik Willis is doing some nice things here. And, you know, and Charles is one of those guys that always skews positive as well. But even he is sort of saying, hey, remember, like, there's no chance this guy plays, particularly playing like this. If Pickett was going out there and spending 3.5 seconds every time he drops back trying to make something happen, that's what it would be like. And you can't really play at this level playing like that unless there's literally no other option available to the team. So the Steelers are going out there and saying, well, prove to me you're not going to do that. Go out there, get rid of the ball quickly, use your first read if necessary every time, and just prove to us that you can operate at a much quicker level. Because that's our big concern. We're actually not concerned with your athleticism and your ability to extend plays and your arm and whether you can read defenses and all those kinds of things. We're actually pretty comfortable with that. What we don't know is if you can do it all quickly enough to even get the position in the first place. So now we've seen him do it the first game and the second game. And okay, we're still in really limited sample size stuff. But this has been a performance that says, if we have to turn to Pickett after a week, all right. Like, I didn't think Pickett was going to sort of win himself the starting job. And I thought that Trubisky at some point, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, was going to play his way to the bench. I think that time scale is now potentially shorter because of what we've seen from Pickett.
I that's my takeaway, too. I mean, I think we see him sooner rather than later, Kenny Pickett. I'm just, as far as defining what he is and determining what he is, we just got to pump the brakes on all that stuff. I don't even, you know, with Kenny Pickett, not that anybody's like putting him into the Hall of Fame or anything. Be excited. I mean, Pittsburgh fans should be excited. I just always like the, when it's tweeted out here, the preseason hype reminder, what Daniel Jones did as a rookie. We had analysts, Dano, who were apologizing to him. People who doubted Daniel Jones during the draft process, like Dan Orlovsky, apologizing to Daniel Jones because he was tearing it up in preseason. Statistically, by the way, not necessarily from a grading standpoint, but statistically. Daniel Jones in the preseason, in his rookie season, went 29 for 34. That's 5 incompletions.
Pretty good.
Imagine this as a game. 29 for 34 for 416, 2 touchdowns, no picks, 137 passer rating. Had some big-time throws. He actually got the name Danny Dimes. That's when Danny Dimes showed up.
That's
2019
when Danny
preseason.
Dimes was born.
That's when he was born.
Preseason.
Granted, he's got one preseason big-time throw since then, and he's ranked in the bottom 3 in the league over the last couple of years. But that was the preseason hype, Daniel Jones. 5 incompletions, 2 touchdowns, 12 yards per attempt. The dude was going to be unstoppable. But, you know, he's been a pretty good NFL quarterback so far. If there's 64 NFL quarterbacks, we'll say, he's been a pretty good NFL quarterback. Daniel Jones has been a below-average starter. That's what he's been. So just, you know, pump the brakes on it. Zach Wilson, I was jumping through the roof. I was ready to watch Zach Wilson be the top rookie last year. You know, maybe Trevor Lawrence is going to overtake him at some point, but I was ready for Zach Wilson, and he looked completely lost for the majority of last year.
I think overall the takeaway for preseason should be there are very, very few players for whom you are completely changing what you think about them entirely. You know, Romeo Doubs is probably one of those players where already, you know, we talked before about the Dak Prescotts of the world, those guys where it's clear immediately that everybody's got it wrong. You know, Dak Prescott comes in training camp, preseason, it's immediately obvious that he shouldn't have been a fourth round pick,
right?
That we just screwed that up, everybody, the league, every draft analyst, anyone that didn't think that Dak Prescott was a first-round draft pick at the time, at draft time, was just wrong. And it was almost immediately obvious that that was the case. I think there are generally very, very few players for whom that is true. But Romeo Doubs might be one of them, where immediately, as soon as training camp starts, oh, wow, this Romeo Doubs guy looks pretty good. And every step of the way, it's like, hey, this guy should not have been a fourth rounder. He's going to be legit. Now, again, it's early. Maybe that will prove not to be the case as well. But that should be seen as the exception rather than the rule, even for impressive preseason performers. What I think you can do is slightly change the overall narrative or a specific narrative. So with Kenny Pickett, it shouldn't be completely changing what you think about Kenny Pickett. You know, you shouldn't be immediately looking at these first couple of preseason games going, oh, wow, forget what we thought. This is Kenny Pickett's as good as any quarterback we've seen come into the draft for the last, you know, 5 years. He's every bit the legit prospect these guys were. It's like, no, like what we're seeing now is, okay, maybe he's still not a great quarterback prospect, but the thing that we were concerned about, the speed of his process,
it looks really good.
Like maybe let's just tap the brakes on that. Maybe that's not going to be a huge problem. I still, even with what we're seeing now, I wouldn't expect him to go out there if he starts as a rookie and post like a Ben Roethlisberger fastest average time to throw in the NFL. I still expect him to be one of the slower quarterbacks in the league on average. But now I'm no longer thinking it's going to be 3.5 seconds a play and, you know, it's going to be the reason that he can't function. So we're just moving that a little
1.91. I mean, it's almost like Kenny's been listening to our show. He's like, I'll show them.
But I honestly think the Steelers are out there saying, show that you can do this.
Yeah.
You know, or at least maybe they're not even telling him. Maybe they're just saying, okay, let's see if he can do this, because this is the thing that's going to hold him back.
Either way, it's impressive. And look, maybe the Steelers are just good at developing and teaching and all that stuff. And because Mitchell Trubisky, I know you sent me that play. I was watching that live, too, where Trubisky, you know, scrambled out and should have been sacked 3 times and then threw it up. And it almost got caught, but it also almost got intercepted. It was like, yeah, that was impressive. But Trubisky looks half decent, too, out there. I think the Steelers, if we're honest, based off Big Ben's performance last year and the grade that we gave him in the 50s, they should be better. There's a chance they're better at quarterback, right? Even though if you said on paper, is Trubisky better than Ben Roethlisberger? No, but Trubisky's full seasons have been better than the full season that Big Ben put together last year. And Kenny Pickett, if he graded in the 60s as a rookie, okay, that's not crazy. Steelers probably better at quarterback this year than last year, without the Big Ben limitations of really, you don't want him. He can't move. Mm. He's got to get rid of the ball. He's got to protect the offensive line. Steelers might have a decent offense compared to last year, where it was really painful, you know, 4th and 10 checkdowns and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was painful to watch. That Browns game on Monday Night Football, where neither team could move the ball, that essentially vaulted the Steelers into the playoffs, there was some painful offensive performances last year from the Steelers. I think they might be better now with your boy George Pickens and all that stuff, the additions that they've made in Pittsburgh. That's where I think my takeaway is, with not just Pickett, but also Trubisky, a little bit of Rudolph through these first two games.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I just think that Pickett is now showing that he is an option going into this season, which I didn't think was necessarily going to be the case.
Malik Willis finishes, under 50% completions and, you know, has a nice touchdown pass where he sat in the pocket. Now, that was the one time, on the touchdown pass from Malik Willis, Tennessee Titans quarterback, sits in the pocket, had all day to sit in the pocket. And it was good. It was almost like they said, stay there, right? Stay in the pocket. Not that he did it.
That's absolutely what they've been telling him.
Yeah.
Like Mike Vrabel has been reported as they benched him from the last game because he wasn't doing that.
Right.
And it's funny, you're watching this game, and it's like every time Malik Willis makes a play, you know, a Malik Willis play of like running around, extending the play, doing something crazy, it's like it sort of cut to Mike Vrabel on the sideline, and she's like looking mad at it. Like Vrabel is sort of watching this going, all I want you to do is stand in the damn pocket, work through your progression, and fire the ball to somebody. Stop whatever you're doing. I don't care if it's working out. I don't care if it's going well. I don't care if you're gaining yardage. Just do the quarterback thing. And I'm kind of wondering, like, who did Vrabel think he was drafting? Like, it's not like this is new. This isn't surprising. This is who Malik Willis is.
He's not acting surprised. He's acting like a coach. He's training him, right? That's what you do. You train him up.
I mean, maybe, but at some point, it feels like you should have been expecting this, you know?
Yeah, but you can still expect it and encourage ways to get better and to train it. Clearly, Willis is working a little bit. Still had over 4 seconds per play, 4 seconds per drop back for Malik Willis, start to finish. So,
would you like to know what his average time to throw was on plays that went beyond his first read?
I don't know, six?
Close, 5.8 seconds. 5.8 seconds. Now, this is where it gets awkward, particularly for Mike Vrabel, is on those plays, he went 4 for 6, had a touchdown, and 3 first downs. So every time he did that, essentially, every time he extended the play, it worked. But it's just, you know, Vrabel's out there going, come on, just stand in the pocket, would you? Stand in the pocket, just work through, you know, like, come on. But it's not who he is. It's not who he is right now. It might never be who he is.
Yeah, so I was at joint practice,
yes,
of course.
Yeah,
so you always have to have takeaways coming out of that. Titans, got to see Malik Willis close up. Where I was in the access I had was a little limited, so I was really only seeing the Titans offense.
Okay.
The Bucks offense were on the – and the Titans defense was on the far field.
Brady was gone, so it didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
He's back now, though.
I wasn't – is he back?
Today.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to report on anything there. All I know is my sources tell me they were not concerned whatsoever. They said there's a lot of noise on the outside, but we feel pretty good on the inside, much like they've been saying the entire time.
Yeah.
But maybe he did still go to the Masked Singer like the – theory went.
Maybe. I mean, who cares? I've been saying this before. I don't understand why this has taken this long and potentially like a retirement and a previous engagement for this to be like an offered thing to certain veterans who don't honestly need to be in training.
Yeah, well, I mean, we still don't know why.
Right.
But supposedly it was planned.
But
and,
who cares? Like, I don't even care what the reason is at this point. There are a lot of players that reach a certain stage in their NFL careers and they want no freaking part of training camp. Because if you're a millionaire, you know, who's used to a certain standard of luxury with a family and all these kinds of things, you don't want to go decamp to some college dorm for a month doing pointless reps.
Most of them aren't in dorms anymore.
Don't do you any good. But a lot of them are not in like fun places. They're not in your mansion that you paid for with your own hard-earned money, you know, and has your family there. So the Michael Strahans of the world are the perfect example. That guy reached the end of his career and had like a yearly, you know, game of chicken trying to avoid training camp. It's like, why did the Giants not just say, you know what, you're Michael Strahan, I'm reasonably confident when we get to week one, you're going to be good to go. Forget about it. Show up week one and we're happy. There was a video out there of LT, the original LT, Lawrence Taylor, right? And somebody was asking him about, you know, oh, we got to ask you about this story where you almost missed the game. And LT like launches into the story. It turns out it was a completely different.
You told us on the last show.
Right. But my point being, the team was comfortable if LT made it to the game before halftime, not like training camp. There should be a whole bunch of players in the league where the league is like, you know what?
You should be the player rep.
We don't need you here in training camp. You're a superstar. You are the least area of concern on this roster. I don't give a crap if you arrive during this training camp. Just show up for week one in shape and we're all happy. Like, why is this who cares when Tom Brady is there or not?
I mean, I think quarterbacks, it's a little bit different because you have a Julio Jones or a Kyle Rudolph coming in and, you know, they want, you know, it's about reps and timing and stuff. I get it for like a defensive end or whatever it is. But for the quarterback, especially a Brady, who's always, you know, he's not over there playing Call of Duty like other quarterbacks and, you know, being told to study four hours a week.
Kyler was out there calling plays.
Kyler was out there calling plays, leading touchdown drives, I know. But it's about timing and getting a feel and you know, these guys rep it out all offseason, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's why they don't need to be there for
maybe
a couple weeks
fine
of training camp.
Maybe it's fine. But
it's also, by the way,
Brady's back.
Once you get to the regular season, it's not like they're not practicing. Like, there's time for Brady and Julio to figure out when he's going to run his dig route. It's not, you know, it's not that hard.
Anyway, my overreaction to Titans-Bucks joint practice is that I think that I feel not so great about the Titans passing game on paper going into the season. But I think my overreaction is maybe they'll be better than I thought. So they did a pretty good job of creating some deep opportunities behind the defense against the Bucs. Maybe the Bucs are going to give up a lot of deep completions as well this year. We'll see. But I think the Titans' passing offense might be pretty good. So I got to see Malik Willis close up. He just needs a lot of reps, man. He just needs a lot of reps. He is a special runner. But even in the game, in game action against the Bucs, it didn't always work, right? You know, he'd break out and, you know, get into space and all that stuff, get tackled short of the sticks or tackled for 2 yards. It doesn't work every single time. You need to keep that you need to keep the rushing ability kind of like in your back pocket for when you need it. And then Willis can be the guy that goes, you know, 10 carries, 90 yards in a game. But it does make sense to get Malik Willis to hone the rest of his game. So, you know, he's got to work quicker through his progressions and everything. But in person, whether it matters or not, I think Nick Westbrook-Ikhina as a second receiver to go with Robert Woods. Treylon Burks got hurt when I was there. He had a nice play behind the defense. I think Westbrook-Ikhina is going to be the guy while Treylon Burks is, you know, getting into the offense and all that stuff. Kyle Phillips could be a decent slot option, the rookie out of UCLA. I don't think they're going to be as bad as I thought they were. That's all I'm saying, pass game-wise. Tannehill's been throwing the ball really well the last couple of years. So I think they have an opportunity. My question is going to be on that. The offensive line for the Titans, left guard, right tackle, big question marks. They don't have, I mean, Dylan Raiduns, the guy that second rounder last year, is not earning the job.
No.
Both in practice or in games.
So, no. I mean, he's in a competition with Nicholas Petit-Frere, and at this point,
third round rookie, Ohio State.
And at this point, it's if you're doing it on merit based off what we've seen in games, it's kind of hard to see Raiden's winning that job. You know, maybe practice is going the exact opposite way, but Raiden's looks bad.
Also, was talking to someone from the Titans who said Derrick Henry finally filled out in his lower body. He's like the guy that is an absolute freak, 252 pounds. He's like, he's a little thicker in his lower body. He looks a little stronger after coming off his injury. Maybe Derrick Henry's bigger and better than ever.
Who has ever looked at Derrick Henry and been like, man, if only he had quadzilla thighs?
That's not the point. It's that he's more stout.
Now he does have quadzilla thighs.
He's more stout. Gentlemen, all men strive for gold in their life, right? Gold medals, gold watches, gold everything. However, there's a certain type of man who goes the extra mile, walks with the confidence of an eagle, and giggles in the face of danger. He's a big, hairless, winning machine, and when he unzips his pants, he sees platinum. That's right, Manscaped would like to introduce you to their biggest and best ultimate hygiene bundle yet, the Platinum Package 4.0. Manscaped is the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Now you can trust them with the whole shebang. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF. Manscaped's brand new Platinum Package 4.0 is the biggest bundle they've ever offered, giving you a bulk discount on Manscaped's top products. So you get 20% off and free shipping with the code PFF. It's manscaped.com. 20% off with free shipping over at manscaped.com. Use the code PFF. It's time you enjoyed the finer things in life and get yourself a Platinum Package 4, your Platinum Package. Other rookie quarterback news, Matt Corral, Liz Frank injury. He's the lowest grade. He's got the lowest passing grade in the NFL during the preseason here. He has not looked great, but then he also hurt his foot. He's out for the season.
Yeah, which honestly for him might be the best thing, because now they can shut him down. They can put him on IR. He gets a red shirt for the year.
The Panthers, they're going to roll with Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold,
yeah,
I assume.
They don't have to carry him on the active roster. Like, it's win-win, I think, for everybody other than the fact that his foot's hurt.
Desmond Ritter's going to play tonight. You have Sam Howell, I thought, had some more ups and downs. Still another guy I think's working a little slow. Got to speed up his process. Late to stuff.
One of the things you said before is that, you know, playing well in preseason doesn't necessarily mean much. Playing badly in preseason usually means a lot more, and Corral just didn't look up to it at this point. Now, Corral, like Sam Howell, is coming from an offense that has about as large a departure as you're going to find between college and the NFL and what he's going to be asked to do at this level.
Honestly, Willis has a lot of adjusting
and
to
those
do
are,
as well.
And those are three guys that right now look a long way away from just the fundamentals you're going to need as an NFL quarterback. Now, Malik Willis might have the most upside to be able to offset that, you know, with all the stuff he's doing. Like, all of it is making Vrabel mad, but it works, you know? So there's something to that.
That's like, what's intriguing, right? As he improves these other parts of his game, Malik Willis has.
Yeah, and if he was in a situation where, you know, if he'd gone to a team at the top of the draft that had no alternatives, you might roll with that and say, all right, it's going to drive the coach insane, but it can function. Like, you can win and play with a quarterback playing this style. It's just at some point you're going to need him to develop and, you know, expand what he does. But now the Titans don't need it because they have Ryan Tannehill and he's just not going to start for the foreseeable. But yeah, the three guys that have played in an offense with the largest departure from the NFL are the three guys that look that way. And Corral in particular, looks the furthest away. So now he doesn't have to worry about that. There's no, like, you know, people were saying, oh, there's maybe there's a way that Corral plays late in the season if, you know, everything else is going. No.
You were saying that.
People were saying it. It was reported. Insiders. Insiders were saying
You're an outsider. You were saying it.
I wasn't saying it. Well, maybe I was.
Yeah, you were.
Okay.
Well, it was like a couple weeks ago, man. I know you're getting old and all that stuff, but just a couple weeks ago, like, yeah, Matt Corral's going to be playing the last five games and the Panthers are out of the playoffs.
That was my bold prediction, wasn't it? Yeah.
Okay, just bold.
Yeah.
Which is basically a guess.
Yeah.
Guessing prediction.
Anyway, he clearly didn't look capable of that based off what we've seen so far in preseason. So now they get to shut him down and he just gets to concentrate on what he can do in the future, which I think is good for everybody there.
So it looks like Kenny Pickett, and again, we'll see Desmond Ridder again tonight. Ridder's bad plays, I think, were less process and timing oriented. It was just late and bad. a near pick six that got
late and bad.
Yeah, just that got negated. Ridder and Pickett have been the best from a speed and processing standpoint, I think, among the rookies so far.
Yeah.
The other rookies getting some hype who've played pretty well, Brock Purdy with the 49ers. I haven't watched him closely enough to comment, but it sounds, you know, again, I'm getting this secondhand information where the fans are saying that the announcers are saying and the media is saying he's as good as Jimmy Garoppolo, which probably isn't the case, but he's Mr. Irrelevant, had a pretty nice career at Iowa State. So you got Brock Purdy, you have Skylar Thompson from the Miami Dolphins, who is the highest graded quarterback this weekend of any QB. And then Bailey Zappe, who's going to, you know, he's
Thick
fighting.
Case Keenum?
Thick Case Keenum is looking pretty good for the New England Patriots. Fighting Brian Hoyer for a backup job there. So
Skylar Thompson and Velus Jones are interesting to me this year because they're similar players in terms of they're both old rookies. And this is a year where there's a lot of old rookies because it was the COVID year that gave a lot of guys an extra season in college. And at the time, it was like, oh, we give these guys an extra year. You know, COVID caused all kinds of chaos, lost seasons for a lot of people. But then we fast forwarded a year, and it's like everybody forgot that was a thing, and we just hold it against them the way we hold it against all old rookies. You know, generally speaking, in the sort of previous decades, having to, needing that last year in college is like an indication of something wrong with you as a player. Like, why couldn't you break out at 19? Why did you have to wait until you were 21 and you were older than all these other guys and more physically developed? You needed the physical advantage to be able to win. That's a red flag, because in the NFL, you're not going to have that. Everybody's a physical freak. And it was sort of used as a stick to beat prospects with. But, like, you can't sort of give them a free year because of COVID and then charge them for it later. It's sort of,
Look, for receivers, there's a pretty good history of, like, earlier is better age-wise.
Of course. But again, it's like it feels like a bait and switch. You can't be like, well, have an extra year because COVID hit everybody and we lost the seasons. And then, oh, look at this freak. Why did he need a five-year college career to be any good?
It's not that, though, necessarily. It's when you're watching a guy play. It doesn't mean that every 23-year-old is going to be bad, right? I mean, I've been down this rabbit hole recently of when do guys break out? And it's like edge defenders and receivers, it's better if they break out earlier, if you see something at 20 or 21 years old. However, Khalil Mack got drafted at 23. Calvin Ridley got drafted at 23+. They're both really good, right? It doesn't mean there's not exceptions here. But when you're watching college film and a guy is 23 or 22, almost 23, his senior year, you just have to acknowledge that he's going up against 19-year-olds lot of the time.
It's even more fun for these two because they're 25.
Yeah, I know. They're saying it's like you're talking about grown men going up against still developing men, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a difference. So you just have to say, if you're going to say this guy had great stats, this guy had great performance, you have to adjust performance for age. I think the overrated part of the age is like, oh, he's got no upside. And so it's not necessarily that. It's that you can't be like, wow, this guy's incredible, and not acknowledge he's 3 years older than everyone else. That type of thing.
Yeah. So Velus Jones, born May the 11th, 1997, 25 years old. Anyway, my point being that we've a lot of pre-draft talk on both these guys was how old they were and the negative that is and how much you have to discount their player, whatever it is. It was used as a reason not to draft them high or not to buy into them as prospects. And so far, both these guys have looked pretty handy. Velus Jones was making some nice returns to the Bears. Skylar Thompson was out there balling with the backups. Eric Galco was talking about how he could put himself in a position for the backup job in Miami. which
I like Galco, but he's the Shrine guy.
Yeah, hype man for the Shrine guys.
Yeah. Jim Nagy hypes up the Senior Bowl, and mm-hmm. Eric Galco hypes up the Shrine Bowl guys. I will say, I think the Shrine Bowl's got a lot of good players that came out of there this year.
Oh, yeah. And
speed, you know, guys like Tyquan Thornton and their speed.
As good as Skylar Thompson has been, their backup is Teddy Bridgewater. Like,
yeah, he's not taking Teddy Bridgewater's job.
Not unless something traumatic happens. Like, that would be quite the statement. Particularly, you know, as much as Miami sounds like they're buying into Tua, and blah, like, we don't know what Tua is. Like, if Tua stinks this year, you might need the backup, and it probably doesn't want to be Skylar Thompson.
Yeah, Teddy,
if you're having to turn to him in week 7.
Teddy's one of the best backups in the league.
Yes.
So I would not go that far yet.
That being said, Teddy, you know, 50% completion versus Skylar Thompson's 76%.
Well, so, there you go. Sold. I've got some other takeaways just running around various spots here. Houston Texans, this isn't rookies, but the Houston Texans, my overreaction to their preseason, they might have a feisty little defensive line.
Defense
in general, right? So you've got Lovie Smith there, who always gets, he plays cover two all the time. Not necessarily. Derek Stingley played football the other day. Good. He made a nice play, got beaten another time. They might be feisty on defense. Okoronkwo has been awesome rushing the passer. He gave Trevor Penning, the rookie tackle from the Saints, absolute fits in week 1.
Yeah.
Oboe was a guy that
he's a good player.
Was very good at Oklahoma. Always had really good pass rushing grades. Limited time injuries with the Rams. Never really broke out. Could be a nice breakout player for the Texans. Former Patriots, second rounder? Derek Rivers. All of a sudden, maybe healthy and rushing the passer pretty well. And then Jonathan Grenard over there, Grenard. So, second best pass rushing grade during the preseason among teams, Houston Texans. I don't know if they'll be good anywhere else. Just saying, they could be a feisty little pass rushing unit based off of the 2 preseason games I've seen.
Yes. One of which was against the Rams, who treat preseason with the most contempt of any team in the NFL. There isn't a Rams starter anywhere near the field in preseason. Like, look, I mean, just look at the players that they played against Houston. You know? It's
John Wolford was under heat the other day.
Yeah, John Wolford being under heat because of the backup offensive line in there, along with the backup receivers and the backup running backs and the backup everything else.
Let me overreact, please. Yeah. Let me overreact. Oboe's breakout year. It's happening right now.
My favorite thing about that was, you know, in preseason is where a lot of broadcasts start playing around with things as well. And they were interviewing Sean McVay during the game, like live, not, you know, in a break, but like as things are happening, as plays are going on, McVay's got the headset on. And during that, you know, somebody fumbled the ball and McVay's like losing his mind, you know, that he's stuck in an interview with these guys. It's like, you guys are like, McVay was pretty funny. He was like, you guys are making me like, I can't deal with this. I gotta go chew somebody out for fumbling the ball. You know, it was pretty funny. I like that. I think that just should be instituted during the, during the regular season. Let's just co-opt the coach during a really important moment of the game and see what his thoughts are. Yeah, Belichick, what do you think about the fumble that your running back just had?
Yeah, we definitely need that. That would be awesome. And, Major League All-Star Game did a really good job this year of miking up players while they were pitching and everything. Like, they had done it with outfielders before who were just like, I'm just standing here. If the ball gets hit to me, great. But like pitchers, they're talking about what they're going to throw and all this stuff. It was pretty cool.
So there's like, when you look at sports around the world, there's a broad spectrum of how intrusive the media and the broadcast can be. You know, on the one end of the scale, you've got like the English Premier League soccer, where you get like a quick interview at the end of the game, you know, in front of a advertising hoarding, like a sponsor thing, right? And the guy comes out, he gives you 30 seconds of crap, and then he leaves. That's it. That's your access. Done. The end. And you don't hear from officials, you know, and none of this stuff. So it's all closeted away. You get almost no access whatsoever. At the other end of the scale, the Australians are at the bleeding edge of like pioneering intrusive media. They started that crap of interviewing people during games, where you would have backup players, you would have like coaches. The actual head coach while stuff is going on. It is not a break and play. We're just talking to him during this 3-minute stretch where anything could be going on. And they're just like, chat, hey, what do you think? You know, hey, they've been pretty good right now. You know, you're down by 8. How are you feeling? Like, they've also been the one that had the cameras in the dressing rooms, you know, like watching team talks and stuff. Like, they will, and then they would also, the second the game is over, they would run up and like throw a microphone in a player's face as he's like walking off and start interviewing and be like, wow, that guy just got his ass kicked by 30 points. And you're asking him like, well, you know, tell us about how your day went.
How do you feel?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm just saying that the Australians are really pioneering that, like how to get the media right in there, you know. And if the NFL wants to go down that route, that's where you got to go look. You got to go look at the Australians.
NFL probably doesn't need it a ton, but it would be entertaining.
I mean,
sometimes,
you know, who's to determine what a need is? I'm just saying, if McVay was on the mic every week, that would enhance the product.
Eric Azukanma from Miami Dolphins. You kind of liked him around the draft time, right?
Yeah.
Texas Tech wide receiver.
There's so many good wide receivers every year now in college that I think you're going to find, you know, these guys every year where they can play. You know, whether it's him, whether it's Velus Jones, whether it's Romeo Doubs, there's always these guys now in the mid rounds where you like them, you know, from their tape, and they come in and they look like they can be a factor at the NFL level. Maybe they can't be, you know, an elite number one wide receiver, although Doubs might be, but they can play.
It makes the wide receiver team building strategy really fascinating, right? I mean, with quarterbacks, it's clear cut, right? Do whatever you want, do whatever you can to find a top 8 quarterback, and if you don't have one, keep looking. Seems like it's pretty straightforward. You just need one. With receivers, we could say, you know, our numbers say, hey, it's the second most valuable position on the football field behind quarterback. It's also dependent on quarterback a little bit. We've seen the value of Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill and A.J. Brown, the three guys who just got traded this offseason. And we've seen the market go crazy and catch up, maybe, to our take that it's the second most valuable position. At the same time, there's starting to become a surplus because of how college is playing, right? You're going to have 3 and 4 wide receivers and a lot of in a lot of offenses in college. So what's the best strategy? If there's a surplus of receivers, but you know having good ones is extremely valuable. So you know you have to have good receivers, but does that mean you go and pay for them? Do you pay for the certainty? Or because it's also a volume-driven position, tactically and strategically, you want to have 4 or 5, do you just draft 3
so
every single year and just continue to stock up and you get them on their rookie contract deals?
How do you
attack it?
Yeah, we've had some emails come in that ask something, you know, similar to that, or sort of receiver looks like it's becoming like running back, where you can get a running back anywhere. Like, why would you ever draft a guy in the first round when you can grab any running back in the fourth and it's the same? NFL podcast at pff.com if you want to email us in anything, questions, whatever. So we had people asking that. I think where it becomes, because receivers starting to look like that now, where you can get receivers all throughout the draft. There's so many every single year. The strike rate is really good. It's starting to look like, why would you ever take a receiver high? But I think the difference is, you know, even in this world of running back by committee, it doesn't, receiver, you still really need that elite number one superstar guy. Or you don't really need him, but it helps a lot. So Ja'Marr Chase being the perfect example. Chase comes in and immediately not just transforms the Bengals offense generally, but makes life easier for T. Higgins, for Tyler Boyd, for everybody. And what he's able to do, you know, had a completely transformative effect because he's got that elite number one special skill set that can win from everywhere. I think Devontae Adams has a pretty good chance of doing that for the Raiders. I think A.J. Brown has a pretty good chance of doing that for Philadelphia now and was doing it for Tennessee even before he got traded. So there's a big difference in finding that guy wherever you're able to find him. Even if you're able to get, you know, the 2 through 5 in the receiving core anywhere and have almost no investment into that guy, I think there's still a lot of value in finding that number one. And Philadelphia might end up being the perfect case study for this because, okay, forget the fact that Devontae Smith hasn't necessarily become the receiver yet that they thought when they were drafting him in the first, but they're about to have almost no resources tied up monetarily in receivers 2 through 5 or 6.
right,
and then have a ton of money thrown at A.J. Brown. And with that, they're going to end up with this potentially amazing receiving group that generally doesn't have a lot of money in it. You know,
that's where I'm wondering if that's I like the path you're going down, because I think where we can say, hey, receivers, the second most valuable position behind quarterbacks. The problem is my guy, Corey Davis or Christian Kirk. The problem is when you have your number two wide receiver. Those are the guys where I think paying $10 to $15 million for those guys, not for the high, like the high end number twos who are borderline number ones, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, like paying $20 million for Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. Those guys are 1A, 1B type of receivers. I think once you get in that $10 to $15 million range or more for a number two type of receiver, Corey Davis, Christian Kirk, even Michael Gallup. I mean, Michael Gallup, I like at $10 million, but that's probably the cutoff where there's a fair discussion of what if we draft two or three of these guys every year? You stumble into one Romeo Doubs, right? You stumble into one guy. Because Doubs, my overreaction, he could be Michael Gallup, like in year one. He could be Michael Gallup-esque in year one for the Green Bay Packers at a fraction of the price. But that, imagine how good Romeo Doubs looks if you still have Davante Adams. Because that's the issue, right? You need Doubs to kind of replace Davante Adams' production, whereas the Packers last year, we were saying they need a guy to take pressure off of Davante Adams, whereas they had a Romeo Doubs projecting him. That was that could have been the difference in them making a little Super Bowl run there.
It's the problem with distilling every sort of shred of football information down into this like cookie cutter, simple paint by numbers type of explanation. Generally, wide receiver is the second most valuable position in the NFL, but it isn't as simple as that. It doesn't mean that every wide receiver is more valuable than the corresponding other position, corner, pass rusher, whatever it is. It means that the very elite wide receivers are the second most valuable players in the NFL. You know, quarterbacks are number one by a mile. They're off in their own little world. But after that, if it's like when you're doing these fantasy drafts, you know, you get your quarterback, and then what do you go for next? Well, the next thing you want is the best wide receiver in the NFL, because that guy is the second most valuable player in the NFL, in the league. So those guys, I think, are more valuable than the best corners, than the best pass rushers, than, you know, those things. But you run out of those guys reasonably quickly.
Right.
And there's a bunch of them. Like, there's a bunch of elite number one superstars. But you get beyond that quite quickly, and then I think the dynamic starts to change. And in particular, with wide receiver, we talk about that like it's one position, but it isn't. There's five guys on the roster. There's probably three positions on the roster between your number one X receiver, your Z, your slot guy. And that's before you get into the idea of, well, there's different types of slot, and there's, you know, tight ends are effectively playing just wide receiver as well. We're talking probably about four or five different positions, and they don't all have that. Well, they're all the second most valuable. No, because they're not. Like, a good high-end slot receiver is a good player, but he's probably not more valuable than, you know, the best pass rusher you can find, or the best corner, you know, the best number one corner you can find. So,
well, you wouldn't take Golden Tate over Myles Garrett then, huh?
No.
Okay. That's not how you're supposed to read war numbers and interpret them?
Don't believe so. So that's, I think, instructive when you're looking at this and saying, all right, we know that wide receiver is really valuable. We're starting to find out that it's quite easy to find them. So, why, you know, teams should start playing the wide receiver position like running backs and never draft them in the first round. I think what we're saying, or what I would take from the information right now, is if I think there's a Ja'Marr Chase in the draft and I'm in position to get him, I'm still 100% fine with spending a top five draft pick on a special wide receiver talent. Or I'm also fine with paying a Tyreek Hill, a Ja'Marr Chase, a Justin Jefferson, whoever it is. I'm fine with paying that guy elite wide receiver money. I'm fine with dropping $25, $30 million a season on somebody I know is a guaranteed superstar. But the next positions two through five or six on my depth chart, that's where I'm playing that game. I'm throwing a ton of mid-round draft picks at wide receivers.
Yeah.
And trying to assemble a dirt cheap group of guys that can play.
I do wonder if the wide receiver two and three market is what gets affected by this. The best scenario for me is still to have a, you know, what the Bucs have, what the Cowboys had. I think, you know, two true number ones. I think that's still the best scenario. But if you can't, if you don't have access to the second number one, maybe it is like, hey, don't overpay for a two. Don't overpay for a three. Build through the draft because that's where the surplus is coming in.
Because, like, if you went and just, okay, you've got to cherry pick the successes, obviously, but just to give you a kind of indication of what you could achieve, you know, if you had your guaranteed superstar number one wide receiver and then you flooded like a bunch of draft picks in the mid round somewhere, you know, even just looking last year, if your group of two through five wide receivers was an Amon-Ra St. Brown, you know, if you got Romeo Doubs this year, if you got
Cooper Kupp,
Nico Collins looks like he might be, you know, a really impressive player heading into year two. Like, there's a ton of these guys you could have snagged in the mid rounds that are able to come in and be good right away.
I was going to say something.
Yeah?
College football's back.
Yeah.
It's time to enjoy the tradition, the fun, and the great offers from DraftKings Sportsbook. It's the best segue we've ever had. To celebrate the best time of year, right now, every customer, new customers, can bet just $5 on any team and get $200 in free bets instantly, win or lose. That's new customers only. If that's not enough action, you can also place a same-game parlay for a shot at an even bigger payout. Just combine multiple bets into one, like which team will get the win, which team will score first, and more. That's always good when you have a really good team. They're probably going to score first. You got them to win. You combine them, get that same game parlay going. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF. Bet just $5 on college football and get $200 in free bets instantly. That's code PFF only at DraftKings Sportsbook. 21 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for terms and resources. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Tennessee, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. One per customer. Minimum $5 deposit and wager, $200 issued as $8 to $25 bets. I thought we consolidated this whole thing into one 1-800-GAMBLER number. Can we get Tennessee and New York on board here, please?
I mean, look, this is the problem with your whole country. You know, the states' rights kind of deal is you go and they have their own gambling numbers.
I mean, I agree. Right, I agree with the states' rights.
And then they can change it and you can't do anything about it.
I stand with the states' rights, but not when it comes to, like, we can federalize numbers. One gambling number.
Can't do it.
You know?
It's overreach.
I feel like we could do that.
Can't have it. Can't have that kind of federal overreach.
That might be the one place I'll let the federal government intrude is the one gambling number gambling that will numbers. Consolidate my...
I mean, I'm all for any federal overreach that makes my life easier.
Basically.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like, if you could cut 20 seconds. If you cut 20 seconds off that read, I could talk more about DraftKings Sportsbook and how good this deal is.
Maybe that's how, if I run for government, that'll be my platform. Everything I do, all of my policies will make your life easier.
That's what you do.
All of them. Yeah. Everything I want to do will make your life easier.
You steal the easy button.
Vote for Sam. I mean, you can't because I'm not an American citizen, so I can't run for government. But when I do...
Soon. You're on your way, though.
Yeah. When I do, that'll be my platform.
You can steal the easy button from Staples. That'll be like... Yeah. Just put your face on the easy button.
All of my policies make your life better.
Make your life better.
Vote for Sam.
Yeah. There are no lies told here. Everything I do will make everyone's life better.
Yeah.
Because everyone's got the same expectation. Yeah, that'll definitely work.
Mm-hmm.
How about Isaiah Likely?
Yeah.
Ravens fourth-round tight end absolutely tearing it up. Just... unstoppable last night against the Arizona Cardinals. It's not just game hype, though. It's been practice hype. I mean, he's making great plays at practice all the time. This might change projections for the Ravens. You know, we're spending the whole offseason talking about the receiving core, and they traded Marquise Brown and all that stuff, and they made a calculated risk, Sam. I mean, Marquise Brown, he's not a bad wide receiver. He's not the number one wide receiver we're talking about. He's exactly the type of receiver, actually, that I'm saying, I don't want to pay him $20 million a year. Mm-hmm. I probably don't want to pay him $15 million a year. And the Ravens made a calculated decision to trade him, get a first-round pick in return. And having a tight end like Isaiah Likely step up the way he has in training camp in the preseason and maybe become the best 1-2 punch at tight end in the entire NFL, Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, this is huge for the Ravens, who have so many questions as far as what their pass game is going to look like.
Each of whom was drafted in the fourth round, right?
Andrews was in the third.
Third, okay.
Yes. Both model guys, by the way. The draft model, high on both. They're in the due draft column.
I mean, the due draft column. Draft grades were high on Isaiah Likely as well. His profile, actually, in college is pretty spectacular. He got better every single year. His grade went from 79 in his first season as a receiver up to 82 to 90 to 93. I mean, that's a steady progression, all of which is in the right area and heading into elite status. His numbers are pretty crazy. Why did we miss him? Why did everybody miss on him?
Probably.
Assuming we did. I mean, this is, you know, preseason week two.
He's just not an all-around, you know, blocker and all that stuff.
Who cares?
No, I'm just saying.
It's 2022.
That's probably why.
I don't care if my tight end can block anymore.
Yeah, he's been a...
Particularly, by the way, in Baltimore. It's, you know, again, a lot of this is always where the guy lands. If you land in a good situation, it tends to hide your weaknesses and enhance the strengths. And Baltimore is a particularly good spot to land for a tight end that doesn't necessarily do one aspect of the job well because they don't need him to.
Yeah.
So that'll help.
No, I think they're gonna use him just fine. I think he's gonna be a baller. He looked really good. I think him and Andrews, that's gonna be the key to that offense. It's a lot of pressure put on a rookie tight end. That's the only thing. The other thing I'll say, maybe it doesn't show up every single week here in year one, but he's the number two option at tight end. They're not relying on him to be the starter, which I think is excellent. You know, Andrews showed last year, it didn't matter who the quarterback was, he was fantastic. By the way, Tyler Huntley's 30 for 33 this preseason. Throwing the preseason stats out there. Tyler Dimes. Continues to tear it up. But Mark Andrews, didn't matter if Tyler Huntley was out there or Josh Johnson was out there. Mark Andrews was great. Isaiah Likely can move him around and probably handle some of that receiver depth that they don't have.
Yeah. I'm really impressed by obviously he's been a really good receiver so far through a couple of preseason games, but it's the completeness of his receiving performance that's impressing me. He is obviously really good after the catch. You know, as soon as the ball's in his hands, he's able to make moves, he's able to break through tackles, gain yards after the catch. He seems to have really good hands, period. I mean, and his college numbers back that up. The guy had one drop last year in college. For his entire career, he had 9 off, like, 170 targets. He seems to have a really good feel for just coverage, and that's a big thing, you know, as a young player, just to understand space and where defenders are and how to slide into that gap a little bit and give your quarterback a window to hit space. But I also think him and Mark Andrews complement each other really well because of the sort of extra dynamism that Likely brings to the table. You know, Andrews is a guy that can just run routes, get open, has great hands, can make spectacular catches. Likely is the guy that can operate in some tighter spaces, get the ball in his hands, and give him some run after the catch room. They both target sort of slightly different areas of the field, which again is a huge thing when you're trying to replace a missing element to this offense that's been traded away or just doesn't exist in the receiving core.
Do you have any other rookies you wanted to highlight? I know your guy Drake Jackson played well for the 49ers, the edge rusher.
He looked good in like the couple of snaps before he got hurt in week one, and I was like, oh man. And then week two, yeah, he showed up. That's another one of those picks where, you know, to me, preseason is all about reinforcing your prior takes. So anything that backs up what I've already been saying, huge fan of. So Drake Jackson, if the 49ers have actually found a legit pass rusher, you know, where they were picking at the start of this draft, it's an insane, just not stroke of luck, because I don't want to, you know, put it down entirely to just randomness, but it's a hell of a result for them if Drake Jackson turns out to be a guy that can influence the quarterback opposite Nick Bosa, who's just tearing people to bits so far.
Yes, that would be quite the addition for the Niners. I mean, they're still getting hyped up as far as their preseason defense expectations. Drake Jackson, just so explosive, twitchy, quick, good workout that projects to the NFL. You know, I think that's the big thing. It's not just being a good athlete, but workouts that project to the NFL. Drake Jackson had that coming out of USC. Among the other rookies to stand out, by the way, I wanted to look at receiving grade. Here's a number on Isaiah Likely. Receiving grade against all tight ends since 2015 who have gone on to play in the NFL. So like when they're in college, what's their receiving grade? Only guys who have gone on to play in the NFL. Isaiah Likely is number one. His career receiving grade, number one out of 126 NFL caliber tight ends. Receiving grade against single coverage, number two. I mean, everything he's done's been really, really good. So
really, we have to blame Mike for not being high enough on him.
Yeah, I saw Daniel Jeremiah, tweet out he had him in the 40s, something like that. He's like, man, I wish I had him
higher.
You do in the preseason. Oh, I liked him, but not enough, and all that stuff.
Is there anything more annoying because everybody gets draft takes wrong? Is there anything more annoying than the one where you did like a guy, and for some reason, convince yourself out of putting him as high as you should have?
Yeah.
Like George Kittle was one of those guys for us right at the start. Really liked George Kittle, graded really well, but it was a really small sample size, never got the workload. It's like, man.
If I had the draft model at the time, it would have.
Would have loved it.
It would have gotten it. So I tried to do that with Elijah Molden a couple years ago, where I was like, I'm just going to stick to my guns. I'm just going to call him a top 32 player. That was just my feeling, not the model, just my feelings, watching him and everything. Titans, slot/safety. We'll see. I could be wrong, but I tried to say, no, this guy's going to be a top 32 player in the draft.
Let me read you Renner's pros and cons from the draft guide. Renner projected him as a sixth rounder. Pros, advanced route runner, sets up defenders with his stems, still seems to hold. Runs routes outside regularly, bridges the gap between tight end and receiver. Move tight end, essentially. We're seeing that as well. Speed to easily outrun linebackers. He even ran away from safeties at times. Again, we're seeing that. Gets the ball in his hands. The dude is toasting people. Cons. Not the size of an NFL tight end. Won't get respected in the run game. I would argue, who cares? Even when he's in line, Likely was used almost exclusively as a second-level blocker. You don't want him, blocking defensive linemen in the trenches. Again, see point one. Who gives a crap? And the last con, a lot of scheme production in unique Coastal Carolina offense. So that is probably the kind of biggest legitimate question mark in terms of a draft projection is, okay, grades are really good, production's really good, but how much did that offense help achieve that, and is that going to exist at the next level?
Yeah, Likely is interesting with doesn't have long arms, didn't actually run fast. Our combine score, though, because I see the YouTube chat talking about it, our combine score kind of takes all of those numbers and projects it to actual on-field performance. It doesn't say, is this guy a good athlete? I know there's things out there that say, is this guy a good athlete? Yes or no, which I think is valuable. It's an interesting data point. We take our data points, though, and just project it to performance and say, this combination of measurables, will it project a good performance or not? And Isaiah Likely, with his good vertical, good broad, below average arm length, below average 40 time, knowing his height and weight, all of that stuff, It's an above average. It's a good workout, good measurables for Isaiah Likely, even though there are some that look bad. So to me, that's a slightly better way of doing it rather than just saying, is this guy a good athlete or not? It's, does it project at the next level? And Isaiah Likely did have that. All right, man, anything else that you want to call out here in the preseason?
So the Seattle offensive tackles are both playing well, at least in terms of pass protection. Which I think is
Charles
pretty...
Cross had three or four penalties the other night.
Yeah.
That was not great.
No.
So you got Charles Cross at left tackle, Abe Lucas at right tackle. Mm. I think, one of the mini storylines of the entire season here. If Seattle was a contender, you would say, this is a big risk. They had Dwayne Brown last year, they had Brandon Shell. Both good, solid starting tackles. They're trying to replace both. Because I think Seattle's in rebuild mode. They're rebuilding with two starting offensive tackles. You know, if they were contending, you'd say, wow. If they had Russ back, you'd say, wow, this is a big risk. Two new starting tackles. It's still a big risk, as far as winning games this year. But so far, so good. Charles Cross has looked mostly as advertised as far as pass pro goes. Really good at mirroring and just looked like the best pure pass protector in the draft last year. Abe Lucas, both guys coming out of the air raid system, right? Mike Leach, either recruited by Mike Leach or played in Mike Leach's system in Charles Cross's case. So that's always a tough projection at the next level.
Yeah. So,
but it's been so far pretty good for both players.
Let's talk about rookie offensive tackles generally so far through preseason, because I think there's been an interesting mix of performances. Charles Cross, I think, looks reasonably good. Looks like a first-round talent. It's been better pass protection than the other stuff, but decent. Abe Lucas, I think, is the really important find for Seattle, because you know, if they're going to get back to anywhere respectable, they need to start having some good drafts. And if they've managed to find a starting right tackle in addition to the guy you would assume is going to be their starting left tackle, given the draft capital expended on him, you know, Lucas was a third round pick. If they found a good quality starting right tackle in the third round, that is golden. And then there's also, you know, we liked Abe Lucas at the time. There's another couple of those guys where everybody kind of liked them in the mid rounds that look good immediately. So Green Bay
drafted Zach Tom
out of Wake Forest. And Green Bay has this absurd, you know, the way the Steelers seem to be able to just pick a wide receiver anywhere and the guy's good. Green Bay seems to be able to do that with offensive linemen randomly. And so Zach Tom, the 140th overall selection, he's played left and right tackle so far in two preseason games, and his grades across the board in every facet are good. Like 75
plus.
Probably
play guard if they want, if they need him to.
He could play maybe anywhere on that offensive line. Again, if they manage to find a guy in the fourth.
That's what the Packers seem to be doing, right? They have a whole bunch of guys that could play anywhere along the line. Elkton Jenkins is like the, once they slot him in, all the other pieces will fall around him, but they have other guys that have that flexibility.
So, you know, some of those mid-round guys showing up really well, and then the other end of the scale, you know, Ikem Ekwonu's looked good as a run blocker. I know the Panthers posted a highlight clip of him just racing somebody.
Right before he gave up a sack?
Yeah, but the pass protection hasn't been nearly as good, and Matt Rhule has sort of talked about how, you know, he's kind of a way away from being where we need him to be as a pass-protecting starting left tackle. That's a big deal for Carolina. You know, as much as you sort of applaud the decision to take the offensive lineman at the top of the draft rather than reach for a quarterback, and I think you reinforce that decision later by trading for Baker Mayfield, like that could unravel pretty quickly if the left tackle is a problem.
Ekwonu so far with a 62 run blocking grade but 38 pass blocking grade this season. Charles Cross, as you mentioned, far better as a pass protector, so he's gone the other way as far as his splits go. Evan Neal's been pretty much middle of the pack, the Giants' first rounder.
But has definitely shown some issues and is reworking his sets, you know, in a way. Remember when they first drafted Andrew Thomas, and we had Andrew Thomas as the number one tackle in that draft at the time, which even in hindsight is wrong. You know, Tristan Wirfs has been way better, even by the sort of optimistic projection of Andrew Thomas. But immediately the Giants set about reworking Andrew Thomas's pass sets. You know, like, so, okay, we're going to struggle for a while until this is where it needs to get to. It feels like that's a similar thing that's happening with Evan Neal right now, is we're going to see some growing pains until he works out his technique and gets that where it's going to be in the future in the NFL. And I think that's what we're seeing in preseason so far, is there's some good, there's some bad. A lot of the bad seems to be just centered around those technique changes.
The key with tackles as rookies, by the way, Abraham Lucas, who you mentioned, Abraham, fourth among all rookies in overall grade. So that looks like he could be a potential steal there. Expectations for rookies at tackle should be pretty low. Even first rounders, you just don't have a whole lot of players who come in and are really good right away. Last year, Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater. Year before that, Tristan Wirfs. Other guys figure it out in years 3, 4, 5, whatever it might be. So it could be. I always thought this class, whether it is Cross, Evan Neal, or Ikem Ekwonu, all of those guys had things to work out. I wasn't necessarily expecting those guys to be great right away, but they were potential type of players. I'm always interested in seeing the offensive linemen in preseason, just to see how they fit in. A lot of the size, speed positions, or athleticism-driven positions, which is almost everybody in football, but it's just good to see how they handle it, right? How do you handle speed as a blocker? How fast do you look on the field? That's what I'm always looking for in the preseason. And a bunch of these guys are looking like, hey, sometimes they get overwhelmed. Other times it's like, hey, I can understand why these guys are looked at as future good players.
And then the other player we mentioned earlier is Nicholas Petitfrère, who may very well end up winning a starting job based off his preseason performance.
The Titans' right tackle spot is pretty interesting, right? Because that's where Jack Conklin was for years. He walked. They tried to draft Isaiah Wilson and he played three snaps on kneel downs. Didn't really have a replacement. David Questenberry had a good year as a run blocker last year, still gave up over 10 sacks. But the right tackle spot for the Titans, it's kind of been a revolving door, but they've still run the ball extremely well. Pass protection has been a major issue over the last few years. So you drafted Dylan Raiduns, I think, to be more of a right tackle than a guard. He hasn't been good at either spot. And now, like I said earlier in the show, right tackle still a major question mark. Will Petit Freere be the guy going forward? Looks like he is right now. But for a team that was the number one seed, playoff aspirations, it's a question mark there. And then the starting left guard spot replacing Roger Saffold.
Okay. Have you got any more big picture takeaways from what we've seen so far in preseason? Because I got one.
Well, we talked about the Eagles on the PFF NFL Daily today. Asked about them going to the Super Bowl. Brought that, you know, the hype train, either up or down. Go listen to see where we landed. What else do you have?
The Raiders' offensive line could be as bad as it looked like it might be. And if it is, that's that's the thing that derails their season.
Yeah.
All the focus has been on Alex Leatherwood so far, but kind of lost in that was Andre James, had a pass blocking grade of 4.7. You know?
It's not good.
No, it's not. It's not good at all. They just don't look good. Alex Leatherwood, a tackle, I don't think is viable. Like, given what we saw last year, he led the NFL in pressures last year, despite after, what was it, 4 weeks, they went, oh God, put him into guard. This is a catastrophe. With that change, he led the NFL in pressures given up.
And guards should not be given up that much pressure.
No. I mean, he was genuinely catastrophic at right tackle and better at guard, but still problematic, still bad. He's gone. And then it's not even like they went, okay, this is just not going to work at tackle. Let's keep him a guard. They went, no, let's coach him up, put him back at tackle. Well, that's not going to fly. So either they move him back to guard or they just cut bait immediately as a guy who's not ready or isn't going to ever get it or whatever. But right now, Alex Leatherwood starting for this offensive line is an issue. And it doesn't just extend to Alex Leatherwood. There are other problems on the offensive line, not least of which, if he isn't your starting right tackle, who is?
I wonder if you've got – so you've got guys like Trent Brown in New England, maybe coaching staff souring on him. Not saying he's going to be available.
It'd be pretty funny if the Patriots and the Raiders just kept passing Trent Brown back and forth.
I know, right? I mean, I'm just reading reports from Mike Reese in New England saying, you know, Trent Brown and Kendrick Bourne at receiver both need to kind of step it up for the Patriots. And they have some depth. Maybe not necessarily a tackle, but certainly a receiver. I'm just saying, I would look around the NFL. If I'm the Raiders, I'm not tied to any of those offensive linemen. Leatherwood is the – I mean, you've got Colton Miller at left tackle. He's become solid. But Leatherwood is the one guy where you're like, it's not my draft pick, but he shouldn't be as bad as he is. There's some investment that I would want to make there with Leatherwood. I don't see the rest of the Raiders' offensive line as got to keep these guys around and see how they develop. If I'm the Raiders, I think there might be some linemen available, cut days. Again, the Riley Reifs of the world that might get released or whatever it is, I would bring them in. I would stitch it together. I know continuity is important. I know practice time is important. I know all of that's important on the offensive line, but so is blocking people. And if the Raiders currently cannot block people, I don't care how many reps they have together.
I would also say that the Raiders have cap space. Like, they have money to spend if they need to. And there's guys still out there. Like, you know, we watched last week a few offensive linemen get signed off the street and walk into probably starting jobs, or at the very minimum, contingency plans for guys that are potentially going to miss time. The Raiders could do that with a bunch of different spots. I mean, you look at the guys that are possibly available. We've talked about J.C. Treader before. Every time a center goes down, you know, J.C. Treader's still out there. J.C. Treader would be the second best offensive lineman for the Raiders, maybe the best. You know, guys like Darrell Williams. Okay, Darrell Williams has had an up and down career, but he's almost certainly better than what they have at right tackle.
For sure.
Okay, Jason or Peters. God. You've got the left tackle. You probably don't want Jason Peters flipping to the right side. Maybe he's not your guy. But you know, there are players out there that can come in and be capable starters for this offensive line that are available in free agency right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to look through all the second stringers, guys that could be out there. Either way, I think that's a place I would look if I was the Raiders. Well, we've covered a lot of stuff. It's impossible to cover everything, but talked about a lot of stuff here from the preseason. Kenny Pickett going to the Hall of Fame for the Steelers. You heard it here first. They heard it in Pittsburgh first. Not here, necessarily. Well, we appreciate everybody for tuning in. We got one more game this week, and then one more week of preseason. It's about that time. I'm ready for the regular season. You ready?
Yeah.
And preseason, like, my excitement's up, up, up. Get to see some stuff, and it's like, all right, I want to see you guys play full games.
And then we start to dial in the third show. Three BFF podcasts a week.
Yeah, so we'll move in. We'll add a Wednesday show, so you'll see us Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. Don't forget the daily, so we'll be up to 8 total podcasts of Steve and Sam during the week. The daily, don't forget to subscribe to that, PFF NFL Daily, and then go to Sam's pin tweet, at PFF underscore Sam, and if you're so inclined to see Sam throw a baseball.
Or the description of the podcast.
Description of the podcast will also have a link there. We appreciate
any donation, small or large. We've got $5 donations coming in. We've got $100+ donations coming in. We appreciate them all.
All right. We appreciate everybody that tuned in. We'll see you again on Thursday. Maybe we got to get some footage from Rams-Bengals practice. We got to try to do something.
Will I do that?
I don't know. We'll try to do something. But Rams and Bengals, the Rams are coming to town. We're gonna hang out. Maybe get old friend Zach Robinson. Try to get some guests here.
Throw a microphone in his face and see what Zach says.
Yeah. And then he's going to get fired. It's like, No, you can't talk to the media.
Or just doesn't want to talk.
Might not want to talk.
He's never been tremendously keen on the camera.
He knows how to talk about the seam routes.
Does.
We did a podcast together, Zach and I. It'll be like a big reunion.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you guys Thursday.